Welcome, everybody. This week, we're going to look at a passage of scripture from Luke chapter 8, and we're in the series we're calling Do for One. And what's behind the series is this idea that sometimes the complexities and the challenges in the world seem so enormous, they're fairly intimidating, and so we don't know what to do. You feel like giving up. We're following Jesus' example as he actually moves toward problems and then does for one person what he'll eventually do for everyone. But for us, as we look at these challenges, we're trying to figure out this. As followers of Jesus, how could we, rather than be intimidated by the complexities of the world, how can we focus on one person, one issue, one challenge, and say, I'm going to do for that one person what I wish I could do for everyone? Then collectively, if we did that, what happens? The world eventually changes. Let me say just a couple of things before we jump into this passage. Okay, one is a little bit about the setting. I'm going to show you a picture. It's going to be on your screen. And this is a picture I took with a group of people when we were in Israel last year. And on this picture, you'll see what is traditionally known as the setting where this event in Luke chapter 8 took place. If you'll notice, at the top left-hand side of your screen, I don't know if you can make that out, but those are tombs. It's these burial caverns. That's where people were typically buried in the first century. And this little city is right on the banks, the northeast corner of the Lake of Galilee. Now, this whole area, what's interesting about it is it's called the region of the Decapolis. Decapolis in Greek means 10 cities. And so this is one section in what we call Israel today that is occupied by Greek people. Okay, so these were not Jewish people. This is not a Jewish man that Jesus is going to engage with. And you'll notice there's even cliffs there. And as a setting, it says the pigs are going to run off the cliffs and fall into the Lake of Galilee. Just imagine, look at this picture for a moment. Imagine this setting. Here's Jesus. He's coming across the Lake of Galilee in a boat. He lands at this place. It's known as the region of the Gerasenes. And this is what we read. They sailed to the region of the Gerasenes, which is across the lake from Galilee. And when Jesus stepped ashore, he was met by a demon-possessed man from the town. Now, as we read this, we're going to read about these demonic forces and the trauma that they induce. And I know for some of us, if you're spiritually unresolved, this is probably going to seem really strange. And actually, for some of us who are followers of Jesus, this whole thing of demon activity and what's happening, here's what I'd like to tell you. The Bible is very, very clear, and you're going to have to wrestle with this yourself, that there is a very real enemy of God. And one of his primary missions is this, is he wants to interfere with the people of God. And one of the descriptions in the New Testament tells us this, that he wants to rob, kill, steal, and destroy. And so he is out there, and he wants to do those things, wants to bring harm to human beings' lives. I think it's a bit different today. We don't see exactly like this. I have seen this in other settings in other parts of the world. But this is what's happening. This demon-possessed man comes up to Jesus. Verse 28, when he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell at his feet, shouting at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God?" Now, fascinatingly, no one has said this about Jesus to this point. So this demonically influenced human being identifies Jesus as the Son of the Most High God. "I beg you, don't torture me." For Jesus had commanded the impure spirit to come out of the man. Many times it had seized him, and though he was chained hand and foot and kept under guard, he had broken his chains and had been driven by the demon into solitary places. Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "Legion," he replied. In the first century, legion was approximately 1,000 Roman soldiers because many demons had gone into him. And they begged Jesus repeatedly, that's the demons, not to order them into the abyss. The abyss is a Greek thought, similar maybe to a place of holding or torment where these demons would be completely neutralized. What we know from the New Testament is that is coming in the future. It's not at this moment. A large herd of pigs was feeding there in the hillside. The demons begged Jesus to let them go into the pigs, and he gave them permission. When the demons came out of the man, they went into the pigs, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and was drowned. Now, for those of us who are pig lovers, I know that there's a tendency to go like, oh, and maybe we'll forget about the rest of the passage. I understand. I've been around pigs. Charlotte's Web, very popular book. There's an affinity some of us have towards pigs. But the point is much bigger, much bigger. Okay, so don't get stuck on the pigs. 34, when those tending the pigs saw what had happened, they ran off and reported this in the town and countryside. And the people went out to see what had happened. And when they came to Jesus, they found the man from whom the demons had gone out sitting at Jesus' feet, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people how the demon-possessed man had been cured. Then all the people of the region of the Gerasenes asked Jesus to leave them because they were overcome with fear. That's the second time that word is mentioned. So he got into the boat and left. The man from whom the demons had gone out begged to go with him, but Jesus sent him away saying, "Return home and tell how much God has done for you." So the man went away and told all over town how much Jesus had done for him. So what do we learn from this passage? Well, here's my first point. When everyone else has given up, Jesus is still at work. So in this idea, do for one what you wish you could do for everyone, one of the things I have been struggling with is, maybe it's being a pastor for a few decades, sometimes I get to a place, and this is in personal relationships and then also in pastoral relationships, where something creeps into my mind that I don't think should be there. And it's this. It's the idea that human pain is chronic. Chronic. So what is chronic? We use that in the medical world. Just a definition, it's continuing or occurring again and again for a long time. It's always present or encountered. Chronic is also defined this way: constantly vexing, weakening, or troubling. So our world is broken, right? We are broken. I am broken. And one of the challenges that I face is, as I see brokenness, and it's the cycles of addiction, it's the lack of care for other people, it's all these things that we find so troubling. Sometimes I find myself looking at people and thinking, well, you know, they're just chronic. Like, that cycle, what they're doing is going to continue, and it will continue to happen over and over and over again. And I love this passage says something about Jesus and his capacity to interfere with what we consider chronic. When everyone else had given up, Jesus is still at work. So I'm arriving at this conclusion. I cannot give up on people, because as a follower of a Jesus who does miracles, who makes the impossible possible, and I'm a follower of this Jesus who makes the chronic well. So instead of dismissing people, because it is tiring, right? You've worked with people, you've seen the same problems over and over. Here's what Jesus shows us. He moves towards the chronic person. Interestingly enough, this demonic man runs up to Jesus. Jesus engages with him. And after everybody else in town has given up, they've done everything they can. They've chained this guy up, right? They've tried to incapacitate him. They've tried their best to deal with his trauma and the trauma that he inflicts on their community, but they've just given up. This is just the way he is. He's the crazy naked guy that lives just outside of town. If you look up on the hillside, there's the graveyard. That's where we put people who die, and that's where this guy lives. We tell stories about him. We hear him yelling at night. He's uncontrollable. And so they had just moved on. There's nothing that can be done for him. They've given their best. And it's that moment. It's when I feel chronic. It's when I feel like I'll never get past this thing that's happened. I'll never get past this habitual, ongoing problem I find in my life. Will that person ever get beyond that thing that's destroying their life? Here's what I believe. I believe that we can step towards those people and do for one what we wish we could do for everyone. Human pain is chronic. Until Jesus comes again, it will continue to be on this planet. But when everybody else has given up, Jesus is still at work. And that means for those of us who are followers of Jesus, I can't retreat into a form of cynicism where I just shake my head at ongoing problems in this world, but instead, this Jesus who continues to work, I follow him, and I believe that Jesus can deliver people who have struggled for years through their own efforts and their own abilities to get something right. We believe that Jesus can break these ongoing family cycles that we find ourselves trapped in, that Jesus can heal these traumatic events from our past that we think we'll never get past them long after we've given up. Jesus is still at work. Here's the second thing I'd like to point out. It's this whole idea of transformation. Okay, so if Jesus has this capacity to heal, to deliver, to make what's wrong right, well, what does that look like? I just want to go through the two descriptions we find of this man. Okay, so in your mind's eye, there's probably already an image there. Here's what the New Testament tells us. He's naked. Don't spend too much time on that image. He hasn't worn clothes in a long time. It's just this uncontrolled chaos in his life. He roamed about. He didn't live in a house. He was this nomad who went everywhere he could to bring terror. He lives in the tombs. Now, I tend not to be afraid by graveyards unless it's dark. I don't know, even the strongest of us, you feel a little bit weird. This is where that guy felt most comfortable. He's uncontrollable. He's broken the chains that they've used to subdue him. He's isolated. So relationally, he can't relate to other people. He's tormented. He's got this name of legion. It's 1,000 to 6,000 Roman soldiers that make up a legion. He's just tormented by these forces in his life that he can't control and what we'd call deranged. So here's the image of this guy, and he's been a part of their community, living on the outskirts, probably terrifies the children. People kind of stay in at night because here he is. What do you do when there's a funeral? Somehow they got to chase this guy away. I mean, he interrupts life. Now, here's the power of transformation. Here's the power of Jesus in someone's life. Here's the new description of him. Listen to this. Now, after interacting with Jesus, this is that he's still. He no longer has this urge to flee from people. There's a calmness and there's a peace that's overtaken him. He's learning. Rather than being the major disruption, he's now postured himself in a place where he is sitting at Jesus' feet. Just learning. My mind is clear. My humanity is restored. He's comprehending. Whatever these demonic forces did that brought about the confusion and the derangement in his life, those things have now vanished. And he is understanding who Jesus is and what Jesus is saying. Then he's eager. He's actually eager to follow Jesus. We'll talk about that in just a moment. For any of us who have felt chronic, when we look at other people in the world, we think, that's a chronic situation. Here's a beautiful picture of the transformation that Jesus can bring about in our lives. A calmness, a peace, a restoration of the humanity that's been lost through pain, through addiction, whatever it might be, the chaos that marriages find themselves in, the brokenness of families, the cycles of violence. there is a Jesus who can bring a new reality. Here's the third thing. I've worked through this passage a few different times in my life, but I've never dealt with this question. Here's the question. Why the fear? Why the fear? Why the fear from the community? So twice we were told that the people were afraid. Now, here's what's a little bit confounding about that. Why do you ask the guy to leave who just fixed the biggest social problem you have in your village? Okay? So here's the naked crazy guy, and now he's whole. And I understand that a herd of pigs was lost. Yeah, that would be disturbing for those who own the pigs. But why are they afraid? Why are they so uncomfortable? Why do they want Jesus to leave? Why are they not in awe at this miraculous transformation that's taken place in this man's life? Could it be that sometimes we're afraid when God fixes the things that our social services and all of our therapy and all of our hoping and all of our dreaming have never been able to fix? I think it's a classic case of codependency. Codependency is when people are dependent on one another, and for some strange reason, this man had created a space in their community where, like, hey, here's, at least I'm not like that guy, right? If your wife complained, like, hey, you need to change your attitude, you say, well, at least I'm not like the naked guy that runs around town, right? Well, suddenly now they're all a bit vulnerable. Some people would say, well, maybe they cared more for the economic outlook of the city than anything else. I'm not so sure, but I came across this quote from John Calvin, and I think he's on to something. As he's working through this passage, John Calvin says this: we learn how wide is the difference between the knowledge of the goodness and the knowledge of the power of God. Power strikes men with terror, makes them fly from the presence of God, and drives them to a distance from Him. But goodness draws them gently and makes them feel that nothing is more desirable than to be united with God. Here's what I think is happening. Remember, these are all Greek people in this community. If I am not prepared to submit to Jesus, His power is terrifying. So I wonder if this community, as they see this miracle that's taking place in their midst, instead of being able to celebrate for this man, being exposed to the power of God, this power that transforms things that no one else can transform, I wonder if it's in fact terrifying for them. Because what could this Jesus ask of me? And if they're not at a place where they're willing to submit to Him, perhaps it's just terrifying. It's terrifying. And is there anything like that in my life? I want to be introspective at this moment. If God could do this, what might He do in me? And maybe I like the status quo so much in my life. Maybe I'm so afraid of what change would look like, what the cost it would be for me, that I'd say, no, Jesus, can you go? Can you go? I see your power and it's intimidating. Here's what I want for all of us. I want you, I want me, I want everyone who's watching to be at this place where we're ready to submit to this power that can change lives, not be terrified by it. Then here's the very last thing I'd like to talk about. It's this idea that Jesus sends this man. We don't know how long a time has transpired. It could have been a matter of minutes or even hours where the guy who's formerly been roaming around without clothes and deranged and scaring everybody has now had some time with Jesus. And as Jesus is being asked to leave, what does this guy do? He does what you'd naturally think. Like, here's the Jesus that just freed me, and Jesus is climbing back into the boat, and he's going to go back to the region where he typically lives, and this man's just climbing into the boat with him. Like, I want to be with the one guy who could bring freedom, who believed that I wasn't actually chronic, who brought the freedom that no one else could. When no one else believed, Jesus believed in me. He believed that my humanity could be restored. I want to be with him. Jesus does something that is just so curious, because many times in the New Testament, we've seen Jesus do this: come follow me. But Jesus turns to this man and he says, no, no, I want you to stay. And I want you to go and tell everyone what God has done for you. God has done for you. So this is the only account we have in the New Testament of Jesus actually being in this region. Just wasn't a region that a good Jewish rabbi went to very often. But Jesus specifically goes here. And this is the only missionary we have in biblical history to this entire region on the east side of Galilee. Jesus' choice missionary for an entire group of people was a man who had only been wearing clothes for a little bit, who had a history of derangement, who had been traumatized by demonic forces, and now is free. And Jesus looks at him and says, I want you to go. You're sent. Jesus entrusts him with a message. Now, how does this apply to us? Well, from my position, one of the things that we're always trying to do is we're trying to not to measure our seating capacity, but our sending capacity. So we're constantly thinking about how do we send people? This is kind of the imperative of the New Testament. And so oftentimes I think so much of how we want to train people and prepare people to plant churches, to go as missionaries, to move to new communities, to love people well. We dismiss our services this way: is now go and be the hands and feet and mouthpiece of Jesus. So we're always talking about being sent. But I always want to make sure people are as prepared as possible when they're sent. As I read this, it challenges some of my assumptions. Like, I'm the byproduct of this whole, here's your undergraduate degree in theology, here's your graduate degree in theology, and if you don't know enough, you don't have any business going. But Jesus looks at a man who literally would know nothing about the history of religion. He would know very little about theology. He's a Greek, right? He doesn't even know the Jewish customs. He wouldn't even be familiar with the Old Testament. And Jesus says, I want you to go. But when we're sent, Jesus doesn't say, and I want you to teach really accurate theology wherever you go. Jesus says this: I want you to go and tell everyone how much God has done for you. And if I can reduce being sent down to that, it takes away all of my insecurity that, well, maybe I don't know enough. You do. If you have had an interaction with Jesus where he has transformed your life, here's what Jesus says to us: I want you to go and just tell people how much God has done for you. That he's changed your perspective, that he's given you hope, that he's healed those things in your life that you never knew. It's not that you're perfect. I bet this guy had some things to work through. Probably had a little baggage after spending a lifetime this way. You're going to have baggage. I'm going to have baggage. But that doesn't inhibit this idea that I can tell people what God has done for me. I don't tell them about me. I don't tell them what I believe necessarily. I get to tell them who God is and what God has done. If Jesus would entrust this man, he'll entrust you. And he will entrust me to have a message to speak to a group of people. So I want to conclude with this. I want to pray for any of us who are stuck in a loop. Okay, this loop where we'd say it's chronic. I keep coming back to the same thing. That does not need to continue. There is a God who does not give up on us. And I know that's so hard for some of us to accept, because we think, well, I've made so many mistakes and I've done it repetitively. Jesus steps towards our cycles of brokenness and he stops them. I want to pray for any of us who would kind of be overwhelmed by the problems in the world, and we know there's an enemy out there who's trying to destroy people. Could we step toward people who are hurting? And could we say, I don't necessarily have all the resources to fix this, but I do know someone. And I'm going to do for this one person, this one neighbor down the street, this one person at work, this one family member I've always struggled with. I am going to do my best to have them interact with Jesus who can change them. Because I can't change them. I've tried. I've been ineffective. But Jesus can change them. Let's move towards that one person. And then lastly, I want to pray about this. I would just like the gravity of this idea of being sent to rest on us all. Will you pray with me? Lord, for all of us who are stuck in a loop right now, and we're thinking what has been will continue to be, not so. If Jesus is a part of the equation, we move towards you. This demoniac ran towards Jesus, filled with demons, filled with all of the chaos in his life, unclothed. He approached Jesus and you didn't reject him. Therefore, you would never reject us. So we run towards you in our brokenness. And Lord, I pray for people who are spiritually unresolved right now, that there would be an interaction. We come as we are. We don't have to be fixed and delivered and healed first. We come as we are. We run towards you. We fall at your feet. And would you do what only you can do? Would you break the cycle? Lord, for all of us who have a tendency to look at the world cynically and call things chronic, we will move towards people and believe that there is a Jesus who ends the chronic brokenness in our world. And we will be a partner with you as you heal and restore. Then lastly, Lord, I pray that upon all of us, there would be this beautiful freedom of knowing that we're sent. We don't have to know it all. All we have to know is that Jesus has changed us, and that's what we tell people. This is what God has done for me.